So Jonah and Jesus both tell us today, time up. Time's up. Change. Jonah preaches with fear. Time's up. Turn or burn, Nineveh. 40 more days and you're toast. And then he heads off up the hill, sits down under a fig tree, and waits for God's fireworks to begin, for the life-changing thunder, he thought. Jesus preaches love. Time's up. Change your life. Believe the message. Well, the message is good news. The good news is that you, just as you, are dearly, deeply loved by God. Just as you are. God who is with you even now. What if you and I lived like we believed this? Well, it would change your life, and it would change creation entire, and the kingdom of heaven would seem a whole lot more real. The kingdom of heaven would be more real even here and even now. Once a year, we follow Jesus around the shoreline of this lake, stopping to ask those fishermen back there and you and me here to drop whatever it is we have in our hands and follow him. Mark paints a great story, beautiful picture, right? You can see the coastline and the water. You can hear splashing up on the shore. And you can kind of smell the stinky bait in the nets as these weathered hands start working the nets. And even down the way, you can see the tethered boat rocking a little bit. It's a beautiful picture. We can fall into the image of this. But maybe the most striking part of this to me isn't the wonderful setting that I can relate to, because I've been places where I've seen people pull stinky bait out of things and boats rocking in the water. The most striking part of the story is that not one of those guys asked Jesus a single question. Did you notice that? Not one of them. They have no idea where Jesus is asking them to go, what Jesus is asking them to do, how much, which probably would be our first question. How much is this going to cost us? And how long are we going to be gone? Really, they didn't have an idea who he was. According to Matthew and Mark, Luke makes it possible these guys might have heard Jesus preach in a synagogue or two, or maybe a rumor about a healing or two. But here on the beach, meeting Jesus, even then, even if they had, no questions from these guys. John's gospel suggests some of these guys actually met Jesus, introduced to Jesus by Jesus' cousin, John the Baptist, the day John the Baptist baptized Jesus in that cold Jordan River. But today, no questions, not one question at that shoreline. Now, do you know anybody who would so quickly drop what they're doing and follow Jesus without a single question? Would you drop what you're doing without asking a question? I got a ton of questions. You know, at our house, when we are on our way out of the house, or when there's dinner put on the table, y'all come, and every time, just a second, I want to finish the Legos. Oh, I'm almost done with this game, or I'll say, I'm not done with this. Could I get there in just one more minute? All of us say this, and even here I'll say, hey, when the weather's better, maybe we can. You ever catch yourself with an armload of excuses? What about after, hey, we could all? Not anything like that from these guys. What was it about Jesus that compelled them so easily to drop what they're doing in the moment and to immediately follow him? You think it was something in his voice, or a look in his eye, or a strength in his presence, or some truth in his words? What would it take for you to drop what you're doing in the moment and follow? You and I, well, we already know who this guy is. We know who Jesus is. We know what Jesus asks of us, at least as well as we can. And yet we have our foot firmly on our brake pedal. At a green light, we sit waiting. What in the world do you think we're waiting for? What are you waiting for? Maybe it's our questions. So will answers to our questions, answers that we can agree on, of course, motivate us to follow Jesus a little faster? Our girls are remarkably different, Madison and Morgan. They're twins, a minute apart. They are remarkably different, and they live their lives remarkably different. One of them wants to know, or tells us, I need to know what the plan is for the day. They get it naturally. Lori and I both are like this at times. The plan. What's the plan? When? How long, Dad? Sometimes why? Every time. Always. Where? This is what happens. That's not always true, and sometimes they trade roles, and sometimes they both have no shortage of questions for us about the plan for the day. But what intrigues me, not just about them, but about me and Lori, and maybe you, is that the one with the most questions seems the least free. Slower to laugh, quicker to frown, and once the questions are answered, there doesn't seem to be a door propped open to a fresh breeze in them or in me. You find that true in your life once you've had some of your questions answered? Now, if that's true for you, what then is the real purpose of all these questions? Is it possible that our questions for clarity stop our feet and fog our faith? Before Fred Craddock became an excellent preacher, telling all those great stories, before he was a seminary professor, before he wrote the books he wrote, he read Dr. Albert Schweitzer's Quest for the Historical Jesus when he was 20 years old. But as he was reading it, he found himself immediately in disagreement. Felt that the Christology of the book was woefully lacking. More water than wine, he said. At 20 years old, he took the book and wrote in the margins, wrote all kinds of questions, then read one day in the newspaper that Schweitzer was to play the organ at a big Cleveland church at its dedication. Saw that Schweitzer was going to stay after the concert, answer some questions, visit with people. So Craddock bought himself a bus ticket on a Greyhound bus line from Knoxville to Cleveland. And all the way up there, he marked up the book. And then he put on some paper these questions, tons of questions, included the page numbers in the book. When you wrote on page 42, were you... Craddock figured that if there was going to be room for conversation in that fellowship hall, there'd be plenty of room for some questions too. And so he went and he heard the concert, and then he rushed back to fellowship hall and got a front row seat, of course, waited with a lap full of questions. Finally, Schweitzer comes in, shaggy hair, big white mustache, stooped, 75 years old, had played a marvelous concert. Master organist, medical doctor, philosopher, biblical scholar, speaker, author, everything. Came in with a cup of tea and some cookies in his hand, stood in front of the group, Craddock says, and there I was, right there on the front row, ready to pounce. Dr. Schweitzer thanked everybody for being there. He says, you've been very warm and quite hospitable to me, and I thank you. I wish I could stay longer among you, he says, but I must go back to Africa. I must go back to Africa because my people are poor and diseased and hungry and dying, and I have to go. We have a medical station in Lambourine. If there's anyone here in the room, he says, who has the love of Jesus, would you be prompted by that love to go with me, to help me? Craddock said he could feel the color wash out of his face and the lump form in his throat, and he looked down at his notes and his questions, and they were absolutely stupid and small, he said. And he wrote later, I learned again what it means to be Christian, and I hope that I could be that one day. We can all get so sidetracked by so much so quickly. Even with our eyes on our faith, we get curious about, now how long did they stay on that shore? And what about the smell of that thing? And all these questions come flooding in. Are they doing it the right way? Am I doing it the right way? When what we're asked, simply asked, is will we follow? Will we follow? Love first, love last, love always. Why do we delay? The day the message from Jonah and from Jesus, time's up, change. We get the time's up part, I think. We can see the need around us. Of course, it's time. Yeah, it's way past time. The change part maybe is tripping us and getting our feet stuck in the mud. Change? Kind of like it how it is. And wait a minute, didn't you say you love me just like I am? Maybe we're hearing that wrong. Maybe God's not asking us to change who we are because God created us to be who we are exactly as we are. Maybe how we do it. Maybe he's asking us to move away from fear, because that's what Jonah goes through first, is the fear. He's going to scare everybody. Fear turns us inward, doesn't it? Oh, not enough food. I'm going to pull this over just in case. I'm not concerned about what you're going to get because I'm hungry and I might need this a little bit later. And before long, it's all about me. We turn inward. Fear makes us inward, and it consumes us. Like throwing a log on a campfire, and the log gets smaller and smaller, completely consumed by the fire. Fear completely consumes us. Maybe the change your life is, change from fear to love. Love doesn't empty you out. Love fills you up. Love leaves you moving. Love goes with you moving. Love asks you to be you, in you, through you. More you than you've ever been when you are giving away love. Rodney was trying to listen to what God was up to in his life and thought he liked helping people and decided he'd try to give his life that way. And so he went to become a social worker. And then he took a job at a homeless shelter in San Rafael, California, which is north of the bridge on the big tree side of the Golden Gate, about 30 minutes north of San Francisco. He worked in this homeless shelter, and the shelter was equipped to handle 125 people per night if that many people came. On this particular night, it was storming outside, cold and rainy, and quickly the place became crowded inside. More people than there was space in there. Rodney was working as fast as he could to accommodate the needs. Everything he could do, improvise cots and mats to people as fast as he could, but the people were so crowded and the place was so needy that the room got angry real fast. There were three races represented. You know, I really don't like that word. We're all the same race. Aren't we all the same race? But we keep using this word. We have levels of melatonin that's different, and then we move into these tribes, and I don't have to explain this to you. But there are these three groups who have classified themselves by the color of their skin and the way they lived. There were some black people, and there were some white people, and there were some Latino people, and they're all mad at each other, crowding for space. You've been in places like this. You've seen it happen. Maybe we do this too. Well, of course we do, or it wouldn't still be a problem, would it? So you see the issue. They're divided. And every time Rodney would give somebody anything, someone would say, hey, you're playing favorites. That's not right. That's not right. One woman, Bobby, who had slept there many, many nights, but always came in late because she had a job. And by the way, you know, many homeless people still work and still can't afford a place of their own. Well, Bobby came in late, and she's furious. Rodney's given away her mat. She's mad, and she calls Rodney a racist, but it all gets a lot worse when a man named Jose comes in, who already has a mat, comes walking through the room with his mat, plops it down right in the middle of the room, and then plops himself down on the mat and takes off his old, tattered, worn leather boots. Well, when Jose took off his boots, a smell hit that room to wake the dead and to kill them again. Rodney had the feet of death. As you imagine, I think you can imagine, people who live on the street get used to bad smells, foul smells, but Jose's feet were the feet of death, and now he's gagging the homeless here, and a little delegation of white men and black men come up to Rodney and say, hey, this guy's got to go. We're staying. He's not. And the Latinos heard him, and they got furious. Well, what's Rodney to do? The thing to do is to get Rodney into the shower, to Jose into the shower. Sorry, Rodney's hauling Jose out. He's dead asleep in a drunken stupor, and he's north of 200 pounds, dead weight now, he's dead asleep. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? Finally, an idea comes to Rodney. A Bible story from his youth comes to his head. Goes to the kitchen, pulls out this big old punch bowl, puts it in the sink, turns on the warm water, makes it as warm and comfortable as possible, takes some that soap, the dishwashing soap, lemon scented, squeezes it in there, stirs it up, it suds up real big, reaches over, gets a towel and a washcloth, walks back through the room as everyone in the room is staring at him with anger and suspicion. And then he gets down on his knees right next to Jose, and he begins to roll up his pant legs to his knees. He tries to take some of the socks off, which are soggy on top and crispy on the bottom, and part of them come apart when he takes them off. Oh, it's just all kinds of foulness. So he takes these things and says, "Hey," and everybody backs up, "take these outside, somebody." "Not me, man, not me, man, no one. I'm not taking these outside." Finally, somebody agrees to take these stinky socks, what's left of them, out to the dumpster. And he goes back to washing Jose's calf and ankle and feet. And he spends a lot of time washing these ankles and feet. He says the water turned instantly black, filthy. A long time, Rodney washed Jose's feet, and when he was done, he dried off the feet, and he turned around to pick up the towel and the washcloth, and as he turned around, he noticed he was surrounded now by a forest of knees and legs crowded around him. He thought they were there to kill him. When he finally did lift up his eyes, he saw the face of a black man who was one of the most angry, who had a smile from ear to ear. And then he saw the eyes of Bobby. Every face in the room was beaming, shining, and Bobby, who had been the angriest of them all, had fallen to tears in her eyes. And she gets down on her knees, and she takes Rodney's soapy hands in hers, and she kisses them. And suddenly the room is church, the kingdom of heaven, right there, right then. Suddenly, people found things to share. Turned out, one man had a mat and a cot together. Someone else had an extra pair of socks and left them for Jose. When we move toward love, with love, we follow Jesus to the kingdom of heaven, which is always closer than we imagine. Always. And when we do, we notice that the kingdom of heaven's been here all along. Would be right now in a very real way if we chose to follow. Love is calling you by name right now, not with a plan in hand, but with a promise. I'll be with you. I'll be with you. Will you follow? What are you waiting for? May we pray. Free our feet, dear God. Free our feet to follow you and you alone. Amen.